prediction, and free will. If you know all possible conditions of a physical system, you can, in theory, though not as we saw in practice, project its behavior into the future. But this only concerns inanimate objects. We hit a stumbling block when social matters are involved. It's another matter to project a future when humans are involved, if you consider them living beings and endowed with free will. If I can predict all of your actions under given circumstances, then you may not be as free as you think you are. You're an automaton responding to environmental stimuli. You're a slave of destiny. And the illusion of free will could be reduced to an equation that describes the result of interactions among molecules. It would be like studying the mechanics of a clock. A genius with extensive knowledge of the initial conditions and the causal chains would be able to extend his knowledge to the future of your actions. Wouldn't that be stifling? However, if you believe in free will, you can't truly believe in social science and economic projection. You can't predict how people will act. Except, of course, if there is a trick. And that trick is the cord on which neoclassical economics is suspended. You simply assume that individuals will be rational in the future and thus act predictably. There's a strong link between rationality, predictability, and mathematical tractability. A rational individual will perform a unique set of actions in specified circumstances. There's one and only one answer to the question of how rational people satisfying their best interests would act. Rational actors must be coherent. They can't prefer apples to oranges, oranges to pears, then pears to apples. If they did, then it would be difficult to generalize their behavior. It would also be difficult to project their behavior in time. In orthodox economics, rationality became a straitjacket. Platonified economists ignored the fact that people might prefer to do something other than maximize their economic interests. This led to mathematical techniques such as maximization or optimization, on which Paul Samuelson built much of his work. Optimization consists in finding the mathematically optimal policy that an economic agent could pursue. For instance, what is the optimal quantity you should allocate to stocks? It involves complicated mathematics and thus raises a barrier to entry by non-mathematically trained scholars. I wouldn't be the first to say that this optimization set back social science by reducing it from the intellectual and reflective discipline that it was becoming to an attempt at an exact science. By exact science, I mean a second-rate engineering problem for those who want to pretend that they're in the physics department, so-called physics envy. In other words, an intellectual fraud. Optimization is a case of sterile modeling that we'll discuss later. It had no practical or even theoretical use, and so it became principally a competition for academic positions, a way to make people compete with mathematical muscle. It kept platonified economists out of the bars, solving equations at night. The tragedy is that Paul Samuelson, a quick mind, is said to be one of the most intelligent scholars of his generation. This was clearly a case of very badly invested intelligence. Characteristically, Samuelson intimidated those who questioned his techniques with the statement, "Those who can do science, others do methodology. If you knew math, you could do science." This is reminiscent of psychoanalysts who silence their critics by accusing them of having trouble with their fathers.